A quick glance at newspaper headlines these days will see stories of investigations, indictments, plea deals, court filings, sentencing memos, congressional testimony, and prison terms. A common thread to these stories is that the individuals who are subject of these investigations are often facing longer prison sentences for telling lies about what they did than for what they actually did. One can conclude from this that our society holds a very high regard for telling the truth. Yet, at the same time, we face a torrent of stories claiming the truth of alternative facts, attacking the news media as pushers of fake news and the enemy of the people. So what is truth? And why is it important to ask this question? This month of March, our Sunday services at First Parish will explore truth. We will begin by a sermon on this subject written by the UU Reverend Joshua Mason Pawelek about 8 years ago in his Connecticut congregation called One Truth, Many Truths, Any Truths. The star of truth but dimly shines behind the veiling clouds of night, but every searching eye divines some partial glimmer of its light. These words were written by 20th century British Unitarian minister, poet, and lyricist Andrew Story, remind me of that ancient South Asian story of the blind man and the elephant. Each man touches some part of the elephant and later describes the elephant based on the part he touches. The man who touches the leg says the elephant is like a pillar. The man who touches the tail says the elephant is like a rope. And the man who touches the tusk says the elephant is like a tree branch, and so on. This story suggests that there is one ultimate truth for which the elephant is a metaphor. That one truth is a mystery, veiled, shrouded, obscured. The best we have is only access to a small piece of it. The star of truth but dimly shines behind the veiling clouds, but every searching eye divines some partial glimmer of its light. What appear as truth to one person will often appear as untruth to another, said Mohandas Gandhi. But that need not worry the seeker, he continued. Where there is honest effort, it will be realized that what appears to be different truths are like the countless and apparently different leaves on the same tree. Different parts of the same elephant, different leaves on the same tree, different paths up the same mountain, different windows open to the same light, one truth, many manifestations. In a meditation called The One Truth, my colleague, the Reverend Bobby Walsh, writes, "Everything around you is a manifestation of a reality that is a unity. It is there in the maple tree, in the polished beach stone, in the cumulus cloud. It is in the child's laugh, the worker's sweat, your face in the mirror. It is in the fear of war, the anger at injustice, the commitment to reconciliation, the longing for love. These many truths spring from the one truth, and the beginning of wisdom is to open ourselves to the mystery of the one truth." I like these words. I've made similar claims in my sermons over the years. But I also feel a nagging, a tugging, a pinprick. I wonder, is this right? Is there really only one elephant, one mountain, one light? When we speak of the one truth, are we actually speaking the truth? Truth is our theological theme for March. The significance of truth in Unitarian Universalism is most clearly stated in our fourth principle, the free and responsible search for truth and meaning. Truth, especially the truth that springs from the exertions of a reasoning mind, has been a rallying cry for our movement through the centuries. Today, we sometimes call ourselves religious or spiritual seekers. What are we seeking? Oh, we're seeking the truth. That's what our fourth principle says. It says this seeking is part of our Unitarian Universalist identity. If someone asks you, what are you all doing over at that meeting house on West Vernon Street? Tell them, we're seeking the truth. If they ask, about what? Oh, tell them about humanity, history, God, spirituality, religion, nature, the earth, everything. If they ask, what does your pastor say? Tell them, he doesn't know, he's seeking too. He's struggling too. He's on a path too. If they ask, what truth does your denomination teach? Tell them, it doesn't teach a truth as much as it teaches us to seek the truth. If they ask why, because eventually they will, tell them, we seek the truth so that we may know how best to live. I'll come back to this. I still feel that nagging and tugging. Is there ultimately only one truth? I suppose most religions make this claim in one form or another. I learned the Unitarian Universalist version of it growing up in the 1970s. Remember, for many of us, that Unitarian essentially means one truth. The difference between ours and other religions is that, as far as I can remember, no one ever told me what the truth was. At best, we have only partial glimmers of its light. But now I wonder, were we all looking at the same light? Were we all touching the same elephant? I don't think so. You see, I've contradicted myself on this question over the years. I have preached there is one truth. But some of you may remember a sermon I preached at the end of my first year here called Many Truths in One Room. In that sermon, I said, we here know something that liberal modernist philosophers and conservative fundamentalist theologians alike would call folly, something our Unitarian and Universalist forebears would challenge as theologically unsound. There is not one truth. Many truths abide. Many truths reside in this room. Many truths inhabit this world. The immediate context for this sermon was the first year of the United States war in Iraq. Throughout that year, we had been inundated with single, sweeping, reductionist, all-or-nothing truths from politicians about destroying evildoers and about being with us or against us. In that sermon, I attempted to say, it's not that simple. There are other possibilities. There are other paths, other perspectives, not one truth, many truths. I believe this. As one who ministers to a congregation that includes atheists, theists, agnostics, Buddhists, Jews, pagans, and Christians, how can I say there's only one truth? If there is only one, then most of us, in fact, are wrong. We can fall back on the notion that each of us has a small piece of the one truth. But I'm not convinced that atheists and theists are looking at light from the same star, climbing the same mountain. I'm not convinced that Buddhists and Christians are touching the same elephant. I don't think that all religions, at their core, are ultimately the same. They aren't. But I think that's okay. For me, that's evidence that there are many truths, not one truth. And then I remember there was, I'm pretty sure, this event scientists call the Big Bang, which gave birth to our universe, and prior to which everything that became our universe was compressed into an infinitesimally tiny point. All that is compressed into one unity, one truth that binds us together. I've preached on this. We have not only partial glimmers of that light, we are partial glimmers of that light. And now you see, this pastor doesn't really know. He's still trying to figure it out. Is it one truth or many truths? I find compelling evidence for both. So let's get real. It's nice to contemplate the one truth. For many of us, such contemplation is spiritual nourishing. It's nice to open ourselves to the mystery, to reach, if we can, beyond the veil. And I certainly will continue to preach about the primordial unity that binds us together, that binds all to all. But we live in an immensely diverse nation, in an overwhelmingly diverse world. There are people touching different elephants, waking up to different mountains, raking leaves from different trees, staring at the light of different stars, all living on the same block all around the world. Whatever the one ultimate truth may be, many truths abide in our concrete daily lives. These truths collide. And when they do, we are all familiar with the examples of people killing each other, of communities being torn apart, of nations going to war. One of the most critical challenges facing human beings today is learning to live humbly and gracefully in the midst of many truths. Learning, though it can be immensely difficult and painful, to encounter the truths of others, not as threats, but as opportunities for growing and understanding of truth, as well as opportunities for strengthening and healing our communities, of nations, of the world. But this doesn't just happen. Many of us don't have the skills to live gracefully and humbly in the midst of many truths, and I include myself in this. When I refer to living humbly and gracefully in the midst of many truths, I'm talking about a capacity to encounter a truth that is different from one's own, to stay open to that truth long enough to discern its value to the person who holds it and its potential value to you. And then, if there is value to you, to integrate that truth into your own worldview. Living humbly and gracefully in the midst of many truths means living in such a way that you may be transformed by your encounter with another human being or culture, that your truth may change today. Not easy. And here's why. We live in a culture that has convinced itself that the most reliable truth claims rise out of rational analysis, impartial observation, reasoning debate, and the scientific method. However, there is an increasing body of scientific literature demonstrating that this assumption is wrong, or at best only half right. One of the primary sources of our truth claims, even our scientific truth claims, one of the primary drivers of decision making turns out to be emotion. Now, it's not that the reasoning mind cannot discern the truth, it can. But our emotions respond to stimuli first. And for whatever reason we come to believe the truth of certain claims, our emotions drive us to cling fiercely to them, even when evidence suggests otherwise. This makes it difficult to live humbly and gracefully in the midst of many truths. Chris Mooney wrote in an article in Mother Jones about a cult in the 1950s called the Seekers, entitled The Science of Why We Don't Believe Science. The Seekers believed something highly improbable, that the world was about to be destroyed and that an alien spaceship would come down and save them. When the Earth's destruction did not happen and the spaceship did not appear, that is, when confronted with incontrovertible evidence that their truth was wrong, did they change their views? Nope, they did precisely the opposite. They strengthen their views. This is admittedly an extreme example, but for Mooney, it helps explain why we find groups so polarized over matters where the evidence is unequivocal. Climate change, vaccines, death panels, and so much more. Mooney uses the term motivated reasoning to describe the way emotion drives reasoning and how we understand at our understanding of truth. He says, reasoning is actually suffused with emotion. Not only are the two inseparable, But our positive and negative feelings about people, things, and ideas arrive much more rapidly than our conscious thoughts, in a matter of milliseconds, fast enough to detect with an EEG device, but long before we're aware of it. Evolution has required us to react very quickly to stimuli in our environment. It's a basic human survival skill. We push threatening information away. We pull friendly information close. We apply fight or flight reflexes, not only to predators, but to data itself. We're not driven only by emotions, of course. We also reason, deliberate, but reasoning comes later, works slower, and even then, it doesn't work in an emotional vacuum. Rather, our quick-fire emotions can set us on a course of thinking that's highly biased, especially on topics we care a great deal about. I agree. It's very difficult to hear another's truth when we are clinging fiercely to our own. Many of us know that I've been quite staunch in my support for the Sustenet Law, that's Connecticut's affordable healthcare law, and I've fought very hard to see it fully implemented. This is very emotional for me. My conviction that healthcare is a fundamental human right is emotionally rooted in me, and it drives my work. It's very hard for me to hear what the opposition says about Sustenet. I find I don't want to hear it. It even makes me angry. Even if it has some value, even if I might have some rational basis, it makes me angry because it appears to go against my values, which are, again, rooted in strong emotion. I'm a pretty articulate person, and I'm a pretty good writer. I can write an excellent letter to the editor, or a sermon, or a rallying cry for Sustenet, and any number of progressive social or political causes, and I can make them sound very reasonable, very well thought out. But listen to this. In an article called "Why Do Humans Reason? Arguments for an Argumentative Theory," published in 2011 in the journal Behavioral and Brain Sciences, Hugo Mercier and Dan Sperbel tell us that reasoning was not designed to pursue the truth. Reasoning was designed by evolution to help us win arguments. They contend not only does reasoning falls quite short of reliably delivering rational beliefs and rational decisions, it may even be, in a variety of cases, detrimental to rationality. Reasoning can lead to poor outcomes, not because humans are bad at it, but because they systematically strive for arguments that justify their beliefs or actions. I do that. One truth, many truths, or are there any truths? Could it be that what passes for truth is simply our deep-seated emotional loyalties rooted in family, religion, culture, and politics, and sustained by reasoning designed only to win arguments? I don't believe so. But even that is an emotional response. Maybe we never know for sure. Given the role of emotions, given the flaws in our reasoning, maybe we can never say for sure what is absolutely true. But it seems to me, to live in this world, we must at some point anchor ourselves in truth. We must at some point know who we are, where we stand, and where our loyalties lie. We must at some point be able to say the words, "This I believe." We must at some point make difficult decisions. And therefore, we must be able to express what we think and feel is true. But perhaps knowing that we cannot be sure is the beginning of humble and graceful living in the midst of many truths. Perhaps knowing that we cannot be sure is what enables us to fully encounter the truths of others, to really hear them, to discern their value in our lives, and in some cases, to be transformed. Perhaps knowing that we cannot be sure is the beginning of peace, is the beginning of justice, is the beginning of love. Amen. and blessed be. Let us now sit quietly in reflection and meditation for a few moments.